Hello, and thank you for joining us for Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights, Episode 7, Goodbyes and Beginnings. My name is Maren Langdon Spillane, and today we are thrilled to welcome special guest artist from Vermont, Allie Perry. Allie has created an entire paper theater play space for you to color, cut out, and play with however you'd like, so you'll definitely want to take a look in the show notes for a link to her coloring page templates. You can construct your play space right now while you listen to the episode. Today we have another special announcement. We have launched our Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights online store. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever set up an online store before, but it is a lot of fun. We were able to create stickers, t-shirts, hats, mugs, even my personal favorite, a fad pack fanny pack, or as I like to call it, a fatty pack, and a fad pack backpack. All of these products feature the amazing artwork from our special guest artist, and proceeds will not only help to keep Fad Pack going, but will also head back to the artist whose artwork is featured in your purchase. And guess what? We know that you have been working hard on your own artwork as well. If you or someone you love would like a Fad Pack mug, t-shirt, blanket, or just about anything else you can think of featuring your own artwork, please send us an email at petrathedragon@gmail.com with your artwork attached, and we'll take it from there. Visit the store now at dirtroadtheater.com/shop, or look for a link in the show notes to see all of the fun things that you can give to yourself or give to a friend. Now I encourage all of you listeners to grab your favorite supplies and draw, sculpt, paint, or create anything that you are inspired to while listening. Then you can share your creation with us during one of our live shows, post on our Facebook page, or email us at petrathedragon@gmail.com. And now let us begin Episode 7 of Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights, Goodbyes and Beginnings. Previously on Fad Pack, Beatrice, mother dragon to Petra, Azrael, Edwin, Lyle, and Smudge, sets out for the city of Durga to enlist help from one of their famous knights in recovering her missing egg. Stolen, she is sure, by the fairies and ponies. Her children, who she left behind to guard their mountain, end up in Durga before Beatrice does with their new friend, knight in training, Talora. They plan the Dragon Games, a brutal competition designed to find the best knight to help Beatrice on her quest. Talora and another Durgan, Tom Thomas, a stable boy, win the contest and prepare to go on the quest as Beatrice's champions. It was early morning. The sun had just begun to peek over the mountaintops, warming the lids of Talora's eyes. She opened them. She was lying on a bed of hay, curled up with the sleeping Smudge. She looked around and saw the other dragons, Lyle, Edwin, Petra, Azrael, and their mother Beatrice, and Tom, the stable boy, her new friend, all asleep at the base of the giant slide. So, it wasn't a dream. She tried to move, but pain shot across every inch of her body. She felt like she'd been thrown from the top of a mountain and then attacked by savage animals. Well, that's sort of what had happened, actually. She closed her eyes again and thought about the day before. The Dragon Games. Being tossed around by Smudge like a rag doll in front of a huge crowd. Flying through the air with Petra, flying on her own, alone in the sky. The brutal race down Giant Slide, then telling the truth of the Dragon Games to Knight Karama and Knight Morgan. And finally, falling asleep, curled against Smudge's smooth, warm belly while Tom sang songs and told stories. It didn't feel real. She took a deep breath, soaking it all in. It was real. Then Talora realized she needed to pack her things. She was one of the dragon's champions, she and Tom, and she had to get ready for the journey ahead. If she went quickly, she could go and come back before everyone in Durga began to wake up, and she wanted to be ready as soon as Beatrice was. She forced herself up, wincing as her sore muscles and bruised body brought her to standing. Smudge tried to pull her into a snuggle again, but she managed to slip through his grasp. "Ugh, even my hair hurts," thought Talora. "Well, at least I'm clean-ish." Last night, she and Tom had found a stream to rinse often before curling up to sleep with the dragons at the base of the slide. Talora had enjoyed sleeping with Smudge. The furnace inside his body had kept her nice and warm. Sleeping with a dragon was incredibly cozy, it turned out, except when he had started to smoke in his sleep. She had woken up several times thinking that she was on fire. Lyle and Edwin had fought over who got to sleep on top of Tom and had finally compromised. They would both sleep on top of him. Talora was worried that Tom would be squashed flat, but he hadn't seemed to mind. Tom Thomas was like no one Talora had ever met. Somehow, he already felt like a brother to her. He had grown up in Durga, and his family had run the stables at the stone, the fortress at the center of Durga, for generations. He had a lot to say about his job, and Talora and the dragons had all fallen asleep, listening to his stories about the many different knights he had seen come and go over the years. Tom judged all the knights by how they treated their horses. He said it told you everything you needed to know about a person. Talora liked that. Talora soaked up the soft orange light as she crossed the field of giants and scrambled down a steep path into the city. The streets were almost completely empty, except for a few people opening their shops or bustling to early jobs. Talora was glad. She didn't really feel like talking to anyone. Everything inside her felt strange this morning. She couldn't tell if she wanted to laugh and run with joy, or sit somewhere and sob her eyes out. Durga had been her home since she was 7 years old, and now she was 15. Still 3 years away from official knighthood, and she was about to leave to go on an adventure that most knights would only ever dream about. Talora had grown up near the sea, in a city called Tasgard. She didn't like people to know this, but her family was extremely wealthy and powerful. She didn't have many happy memories of her childhood. Her father was a merchant and was almost always gone. Her mother was an influential member of the city's council. Her parents were ambitious, forever determined that the Shamsa family be one of the most powerful in the city, or in all of Dunaya, for that matter. Talora had two older brothers and one older sister, none of whom had had much time for her, the baby of the family. Her parents had encouraged competition among the siblings, believing that this made them stronger, but really it just led to constant fighting, fights which Talora usually lost, being the smallest. Meanwhile, Talora wasn't allowed to play with other children, and she was expected to be quiet and obedient at all times. She wasn't. She was constantly breaking rules, sneaking out and looking for adventures. She was punished, often and severely. When she was 7, she decided to run away, to Durga, to become a knight. She didn't get very far before her sister had been sent to fetch her back, but in the end, her family had decided to send her anyway. Technically, you weren't allowed to start your knight training until you were 8, but Talora's mother had pulled some strings. Her refusal, or her inability, as her parents termed it, to accept her family's values was fast becoming an embarrassment, and if Talora succeeded in achieving the status of knighthood, it might bring the family some honor and recognition. And so she had arrived in Durga, an angry girl of 7. And for the first time in her life, she had felt truly happy. She knew every nook and cranny of this city now, every street, building, and little side alleyway like the back of her hand. And now as she walked through it, it felt different, like she'd already left, like she didn't belong here anymore. It was a sad feeling, but also exciting. As she walked along its quiet streets, she tried to soak up every sight, smell, and sound so that she could remember this moment and take a little bit of Durga with her. Talora veered east and left the city by a small gate, heading along a well-worn road and into the forest, where she lived with the other knights of her house. There were 11 different houses or schools among the knights, each named after a different color. The houses represented the focus of your training. You were free to choose your own house, but those in charge could move you if they felt you would be better suited elsewhere. Each house was run by a chief counselor who was elected by the knights of that house and who sat on the Council of 13. The white and the black knights, on the other hand, were elected by all the citizens of Durga. They could come from any house, but, once elected, abandoned their old colors because the white and the black represented everyone coming together. White, the reflection of all colors, and the spread of Durgan knowledge and values across the land. Black, the representation of all colors together in one place, and Durgan knowledge and values within one's own heart. They were the highest authority in Durga. Dolora had carefully considered her options when she chose her house. Should she choose the brown and spend her life focused on healing, medicine, and wellness? Or the orange, which centered around the sciences? She had been interested in the yellow, the house of the arts, as well as the gray, which was the house of spirituality and mysticism. Though she had mixed feelings about the red, which focused on combat and defense, as well as intensely physical sports, she had been impressed by how the knights of that house could run, climb, and fight like no one she'd ever seen before. In the end, however, Dolora had chosen the green, the rangers. Not many succeeded in becoming full knights of the green. If they did manage it, the rangers would leave Durga and explore the land, helping wherever help was needed, providing a link between Durga and the outside world. Therefore, green knights spent time learning elements from each of the other houses, as well as their own, so that they could address any situation that they faced. They were expected to excel in all of their training: math, science, government, art, combat, agriculture, medicine, and so on. And of course, the greenhouse had training of its own. Survival skills were very important: where to find food, water, and shelter in any environment, how to read weather patterns and observe the signs and warnings of the natural world around them. Not only difficult, a ranger's life was lonely. They were always on their own and on the move. On the other hand, the rangers were the ones who were always having adventures. Everything about the greenhouse appealed to Dolora. She wanted to learn everything she could. She wanted to explore the world and have adventures. And she already felt alone most of the time, so that part had never bothered her. Dolora headed off the main road and onto a winding path that led deeper into the forest. Unlike the other houses, the green knights did not sleep in the city, or even in a house, for that matter. Every year, the green knights in training had to build houses of their own in the wilderness. It had to be a different spot every year, and they would receive no help from any adults. The rule was babies only. In the greenhouse, you were considered a baby, and so-called, until you became a knight. The older babies would pick the location of each year's camp, and some camps were better than others. One year, they had chosen to live on the beaches of Lake Hero. It was really fun, until wintertime. There was no natural shelter, and the wind coming off of the lake froze everything and everyone. There was no getting warm, ever. Last year was definitely the warmest. They'd moved up into the mountains and found great rock formations and caves to live in. One small fire could keep 20 babies warm all night. But this year's spot had been Dolora's favorite, and she was sad to say goodbye to it. This year, they were up in the trees. They had built a network of tree houses connected by bridges and ropes. Some knights in training had whole little cabins with walls and roofs, little stoves even. Some just had hammocks swinging from a branch. There were large communal areas and classrooms that were made by webbing rope all around a circle of trees and placing planks along the webbing. They called this little world Arden. Dolora loved her own tiny house. Over her 7 years of night training, she had collected things that belonged to her and that she could incorporate into her own personal dwelling each year when they changed locations. She learned what kinds of materials were both durable and portable, what provided the most warmth, and what she could take apart and reassemble quickly and easily. Now more than ever, she was grateful for what she'd learned, as she would be able to take much of her house with her on her journey. Dolora entered Arden. It was completely quiet now. Everyone was still asleep. Usually, if you didn't know what to look for, you could walk right through the forest and never realize you were beneath a small village of over 100 young people. But today, there were signs of celebration here and there. Fires that were still smoldering in pits, a few overturned goblets on the forest floor. It hadn't occurred to her until now that they might be celebrating in her honor for winning the Dragon Games. The thought made her feel unexpectedly warm inside. Dolora could see her tree up ahead. It was an old, enormous oak with huge limbs, wide enough to walk along without losing your balance. Dolora thought it looked like the arms of some giant, tentacled sea creature. Her house was about halfway up the tree, with a perfect view of the lake. The walls and roof were made of hides from animals she had hunted herself, and whose skins she had learned to cure and preserve so that they would last forever. If it was just her, it would make sense to bring the whole thing, but the thought of being able to offer Tom shelter too made her glad there was enough room for both of them. Talora climbed up the oak, using a series of footholds she knew were there without having to look. She hoped she could dismantle things and pack up without waking anyone. It was going to be a big day, and she didn't want to get stuck in too many goodbyes. She needed to be thoughtful in her packing. She didn't know where this journey would take her or how long she would be gone, and she would have to carry everything on her back. She began to make a pile of clothes, warm weather and cold weather, including her heavy cloak, which could double as her blanket. To this pile, she added her cooking pot, fire starter, her spear, bow, and arrows, also a few bars of sticky homemade soap and some rags for bathing and drying, toothbrush, sewing kit, and a few salves for basic healing and skin protection. What else? Oh, Bert, her stuffed sea lion. He was her only possession from childhood and her oldest friend. So he had to come. Finally, she was finished. She rolled up the walls and roof of her house tightly and tied them to her pack along with her bow and cooking pot. She would carry her spear as a walking stick, and her knife was in her belt. It was important to have weapons at the ready. She picked up the pack and slung it over her shoulders. Oof, it was heavy. Oh well, she was strong. She quietly climbed down her tree, willing her heavy load not to clank too much, but as soon as her feet hit the ground, there was a loud whistle and a thump. A few yards away, someone had jumped out of their tree, landing heavily on the ground. Then there was another thump and another, and then all around Talora, the trees came alive as green knights in training descended from their dwellings. They began to chant, slowly, a rhythm accentuated by stomps and claps as they formed a large circle around her. It was everyone. Every single baby ranger. The chanting, stomping, and clapping got louder as someone new strode out of the woods and into the circle. Talora gasped. That was no baby. That was Knight Uba Saltar, chief counselor of the Green Knights, the head of all the rangers, and the Greenhouse's representative on the Council of 13. What was he doing here? They only ever saw Knight Uba at the beginning and end of training each year to welcome the new babies and advance the graduates into knighthood. He had no part in their training and was often away from Durga for long periods of time. He walked up to Talora and stopped. She had never been this close to him before, and she stared nervously up into his warm, fierce eyes. Then she noticed Knight Jasmine Port, the Green Knight who oversaw their training, and Captain Lee, or the Baby Wrangler, as he called himself. Lee was the most senior knight in training, the top of his class, and soon to be a full knight. Talora liked Captain Lee. He'd always been nice to her. Jasmine and Lee stepped forward to stand with Knight Uba. Captain Lee let out four loud yells, and then everyone, Knights Jasmine and Uba included, began to chant the Rangers' anthem.
Ha! 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 Huh.
We are the Rangers, we help those in need. Whenever someone needs our help, we march to the beat. We are the Rangers, we help those in need. Whenever someone needs our hearts, we march to the beat. We are the Rangers, we help those in need. Whenever someone needs our help, we lure our beat. We are the Rangers, we help those in need.
Why do kids bully other kids?
Why does my friend lie to me?
What do you do if your friends say you're bossy?
How can I make a best friend?
Friendships can be complicated. I'm psychologist and author Dr. Eileen Kennedy Moore, host of the Kids Ask Dr. Friendtastic podcast. Each weekly 5-minute episode features a question from a kid about friendship, plus a practical and thought-provoking answer. Tune in to learn how you can build strong and caring friendships. Kids Ask Dr. Friendtastic is available wherever you get podcasts.
When they were finished, Talora realized that she had tears in her eyes. For a moment, it was completely silent. Knight Uba spoke first.
Talora, congratulations. I'm proud of you. I've been watching you since you arrived in Durga, and I am very pleased you've chosen the green. I believe you will make a fine knight and a fine ranger one day. However, I feel it is my duty to tell you that I am also afraid for you. As one of the dragon's champions, you will be facing unknown dangers. You have not completed your training, and you have much still to learn. We are here today to remind you that we are your family, and should you ever be in need, your fellow Rangers will always support you. Knight Jasmine, Captain Lee, and myself are here to present you with three gifts. This is a tradition usually reserved for your advancement to knighthood, but in this case, we are making an exception. I will present my gift first. Knight Uba reached into a pouch at his waist and pulled out two books. One was the Ranger's Field Manual. The Field Manual was a survival guide, filled with all kinds of information necessary when out in the world alone. This copy was very old and worn. This is my personal field manual. It contains a lifetime of notes and observations. I have copied these notes for future manuals, as is custom, but this is my original, and now it belongs to you. Talora took the two books and turned them over in her hands. The field manual looked ancient, but the other book was new and had a pocket in the spine with three black grease pencils. "This is your journal," Knight Uba said in response to her questioning look. "You must record your journey, the good and the bad. Your story has the power to change the world more than you know. Do not forget this, Talora." Knight Jasmine stepped forward. She was the toughest human Talora had ever met, completely ruthless in her training and expectations, and so physically capable that she appeared nearly superhuman. Talora had always regarded her with a mixture of admiration and fear. Knight Jasmine took her whistle from where it hung on a leather cord around her neck and handed it to Talora. "Talora, in case you get lost, or you need some rowdy dragons to pay attention, don't die." Knight Jasmine grasped Talora's shoulder in her iron grip and gave Talora a look that made the tears pooling in her eyes spill down her cheeks. Hastily, she wiped them away while busying herself with arranging the whistle around her neck. Then Captain Lee stepped forward. "Hey, Fish. That's your name now. Fish, just so you know. That was awesome yesterday. That was just so awesome. I couldn't have done that. On the slide, I can't wait to hear how your journey goes. I'm a little bit jealous, but you earned it. Here." Lee held out a large coil of rope, and Talora took it in her hands. It was heavy and soft. "I made this myself. It's stronger and lighter than the other ropes we've been using, so you can carry more of it. Maybe it'll come in handy. Good luck." Lee stepped back, then called out, "Baby salute!" Everyone present made a fist with their right hand and thumped it hard against their chest, leaving their fist still above their hearts. Fist to heart, strength and compassion. The Rangers salute. Talora returned the salute. It was quiet. She didn't know what to say or do. Finally, she managed a weak, "Thank you." No one moved. This must mean it was time to go. Talora cleared her throat and tried again. "Thank you, Knight Uba. Thank you, Knight Jasmine. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Thank you to all of you. I'll miss you. Goodbye." Talora turned and walked away back toward the city. No one moved. When she was almost out of sight, she looked back and saw that they were all still standing there, fists held against their hearts. Knight Uba gave her a small nod, which she returned. Talora wiped a few more tears from her cheeks. Since she usually preferred to be alone, it hadn't occurred to her how much these people all meant to her, and she to them. She hadn't expected this all to be so hard, or to feel so heavy. Back at the Field of Giants, Talora was the last to arrive. She hurried over to stand next to Tom, who was hopping excitedly from one foot to the other. Talora noticed his pack was about half the size of hers. The dragons were assembled as well, and as soon as Edwin saw Talora, she bounced over to her excitedly. "Guess what, Talora? We're coming, all of us. Mom says we can come too. She said there are going to be consequences, but who cares? We're in!" Talora grinned at Edwin, glad that she would be able to stay with the draglings. They all looked happy and proud, especially Smudge, who was running across the field with a large wagon wheel in his mouth. He raced up to Tom and dropped the wheel at his feet and then looked up at him, expectantly. Tom picked it up and threw it, and Smudge gave a gleeful roar before tearing after it. Once he had it again, he paraded around the field proudly, holding it up for everyone to see. Talora didn't have time to say hello to everyone. Knights Karama and Morgan arrived on the field just after her, and it was clear they had a lot to say. It was strange to be interacting with them this much. Up until yesterday, Talora had only seen them from afar during formal occasions. They had always seemed like mythical giants to Talora, and now here they were, so casual, so relaxed, so human. "Good morning," boomed Knight Morgan jovially. "Let's get right to it, shall we? Last night we assembled those most knowledgeable on the topic of fairy and pony culture. The Knights of the Blue, you know, have several scholars who specialize in this, and here is what we have concluded. As you may know, there are many herds of ponies all across Denaya. We've had friendly dealings with the Rainbow Herd in the past, so we recommend..." Oh, my. Well, hello there. Smudge had brought the wagon wheel to Knight Morgan and dropped it at his feet. He was now vigorously sniffing Knight Karama. "Smudge," said Beatrice, "please don't sniff the knights." Smudge ignored her. "Smudge!" Beatrice started toward Smudge, but Karama spoke. "Morgan, you don't need me for this conversation, do you?" she asked.
"Not at all, Karama. Go and play with the youngster."
"Ha! Thank you!" Karama grabbed the wagon wheel and wound up to fling it. Smudge started to bounce and flap in excitement. Karama threw the wheel and Smudge tore after it, bellowing. Karama didn't stand there and wait for Smudge to return, however. She chased after him, and as she was unbelievably fast, they both reached the wheel at the same time. Karama took a flying leap and landed on Smudge, who was surprised but quickly recovered, wriggling out from under her before headbutting her in the chest, knocking her onto the ground. Smudge immediately jumped on Karama and started attacking her boot, but she was quick and managed to slither away and climb onto his back. It was a full-on wrestling match, with both parties enjoying themselves immensely. It was hard to look away from them when Knight Morgan resumed talking. "As I was saying," he continued, "the Rainbow Herd has been friendly to the knights in the past. Therefore, we believe that reaching out to this herd would be a good place to start. If you are flying, the journey would only take a day, but by road it will take at least 5. You will be traveling south around Lake Hero until you see the Crystal River. Follow the river along the Dragon Spine Mountains. The river will eventually veer away from the mountains and into the grasslands of Shazboro. It is here you should find the Rainbow Herd. It may take some time to locate them. The grasslands range for hundreds of miles. They could be anywhere within them."
"Who do we speak to amongst the herd?" Beatrice asked.
"Whomever will talk to you. The herd does not have one leader for all matters. One pony may be in charge of the herd's migration, another in charge of doling out justice, but any pony may choose to do or act as they please. It is a unique social order."
They were interrupted by a strange choking, coughing sound coming from Smudge, and everyone turned to look. Smudge was on his back, waving all 4 legs in the air, and it seemed that Karama was tickling him, dodging his limbs as he rolled joyously to and fro.
"Oh, you like that, don't you, you big overgrown puppy? You're just a puppy, aren't you? A puppy! A puppy who likes his tickles!"
Smudge got a foot underneath Karama and kicked out. She went flying through the air and landed in a heap on the ground, coughing and laughing. Smudge pounced on her immediately, looking for something to grab onto so he could drag her around.
Beatrice turned back and spoke to Morgan. "Thank you, Knight Morgan. And the fairies? What can you tell us about them?"
"Ah, yes," replied Morgan. "In this matter, I must apologize. We have dedicated great resources to a better understanding of the fairies, and unfortunately have little to nothing to show for it. The fairies appear when they please and where they please. We do not know how to find them. Perhaps the ponies can help you."
Beatrice nodded. She was clearly disappointed. "I cannot thank you enough. You have been most helpful and hospitable. And now I think we should probably get going."
Beatrice glanced over at the wrestling match gathering momentum across the field.
"Before Smudge gets too attached."
"Of course," responded Morgan. "Good luck to you, Beatrice of Scrag Mountain. May the stars guide you."
Beatrice bowed her head deeply and turned to get Smudge. He saw her coming and immediately started furiously digging, throwing dirt on Karama to hide her. Once his mother was close, he knocked Karama over and sat on top of her, growling softly, wisps of smoke drifting up from his nostrils. Beatrice ignored this and gently headbutted Smudge, knocking him over. He sprang up and growled at her more fiercely.
"Smudge, I'm sorry," said Beatrice. "You can't keep her."
Karama worked her way out from under Smudge, brushed the dirt off of her clothes, and wrapped her arm around Smudge's neck.
"I'll see you again, my little puppy. Go with your mother now."
With that, she walked back to join Knight Morgan. Beatrice looked over everyone. Tom and Talora, nervously gripping their packs. Petra, Azriel, Edwin, Lyle, and Smudge, who was sulkily smoking from his nostrils.
"Time to go," she said, and turned toward the southern edge of Giant's Field. They all followed. The adventure had begun. Hello again. If you'd like to know what happens next, please tune in for episode 8, The Adventure Begins, with special guest artist from New York, Sarah Hopkins. We'd love to see you at the live show on Zoom, or you can listen to the podcast 1 week later. For tickets to the live show, please visit dirtroadtheater.com/fadpack. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the store. And now we'd like to share some moments from our live show.
Hello, everybody. I think Allie is here. I would love to ask you a couple questions.
Hi, it was so much fun to see people drawing and coloring.
I would love to know where you came up with the idea to illustrate in this format.
Well, I used to do puppet shows, like street puppet shows with everyday objects. And so this kind of came from it. Sometimes I would supplement like backgrounds and things and do really elaborate drawings for the background. So I also totally encourage you guys to keep creating your own world, even though this is just a template. So hopefully, you know, things like a kind of accordion style of the mountains will help you understand how to make things three-dimensional and stand up on their own, even if they're just a basic shape.
How do you feel when you're drawing or when you're making art? Why is it important to you?
Well, drawing is such a beautiful activity to kind of organize your thoughts. Sometimes when I'm trying to figure something out that I'm feeling or I'm thinking about, sometimes just sitting still for a moment and sketching something out, whether or not it's the story that's in my head, but just even scribbling or doodling, becomes a really important part of processing and coming back to a place of understanding or quiet so that you can hear how you want to move into the next moment.
That reminds me a little bit of sort of what journaling has been for me, I think, actually writing things down. Who is your favorite FADPAC character?
Well, I really like Talora because she's so fierce and because she has chosen a path that is not easy and requires relationship building, requires relying on other people and being reliable and trusting in her own strength.
Sydney, what did you want to say?
You want to show them this? Look, they're talking to you now. You want to show them what you made?
I need some water. I know that wall is blue, so we use some blue paper.
Who is that, Willow?
A dragon.
I know who. Which one?
Beatrice.
That's beautiful, Willow. I love those trees underneath, too.
And Lily is just finishing hers.
Right? Mom and Petra.
I feel so inspired by your dragons. May I see them again?
You want to show us something, Penny?
Oh, is it Talora?
She's yellow.
She's very
yellow. And this is my city.
Oh, look at your city. Oliver, would you like to share?
It's Smudge. And he's being photo out of his mouth. And I think my favorite part was the leg. It's like blue, like reddish pink. And I really liked that, how I did it.
I really like all the colors, the different colors on the different legs. It'd be so fun to walk and look down and see all the colors on your legs.
So the Rangers chant, that was written by Gracelyn. When we came to this episode, I mentioned to her that the Rangers might have a chant, like a creed. And that chant just popped right out of Gracelyn's mouth. So Gracelyn, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I don't know if you want to say anything about the chant and how it felt to record it with your grandparents and with Oliver and how it felt to hear it in the episode.
Well, I was kind of looking forward for it and I couldn't help smiling when I heard the chant, and I did it with my grandparents who live in Denver. They visited a couple days ago, and so we did it with them and my dad and my brother, and it was really fun. So we had to do it a couple times. This is my stuffed dragon, Golden. I've had her for as long as I can remember, and I really love her.
And that's it for episode 7. If you have any questions, comments, or artwork that you'd like to share with us, please email petrathedragon@gmail.com. Petra handles all of our communication, and she has promised not to catch anything on fire.
Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights is a proud member of Kids Listen, a grassroots organization of advocates for high-quality audio content for kids. You can find more great podcasts at kidslisten.org or download the app. If you'd like a full transcript of any of our episodes to read along or to read on your own, you can find a link at the bottom of the show notes. Fairies and Dragons, Ponies and Knights is made and recorded by Dirt Road Theater in Northfield, Vermont. Our guest artist for episode 7 was Allie Perry. You can find more of her work on Instagram at ragdollengine, on Twitter at AllieBuildsAWorld, or her website, allieperry.com. We will put all of these links in the show notes. Fad Pack was written and created by Dominic Gracelin and Oliver Spillane, and edited and performed by myself, Marin Langdon Spillane. The music you heard was composed by the amazing Nathan Lee. You can see more of his work at nathanlee.net. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us next time.